the circle of crisis is BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, people of color, trans. That is the circle of our crisis. If we lift up from that center, everything else is lifted up.
Nathan Long here, president of Saybrook University here in beautiful, wonderful Pasadena, California. Welcome to another episode of Saybrook Insights. Today's guest is Lilith Chung, who also goes by Lilith Allyoung, a PhD student in transformative social change here at Saybrook University. Lilith's background supporting positive social change is truly inspiring, as is her approach to life in general. We'll learn more about Lilith's journey, including her book, now available at Amazon. All right, let's get to it with Lilith Allyoung. So I've had the privilege of meeting this wonderful human being in an office the day before the big gala ceremony about a year and some change ago, and was just mesmerized by her passion and her resourcefulness and her commitment to the work she does. Lilith, it is a joy to have you here today. Thank you for being on Saybrook Insights.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Long. It's really an honor to be here and being able to see you again and continue our work together at the university.
Indeed, indeed. I was so happy to have you here. We're going to hop right into it, if you don't mind, because there's a lot I think you can tell us and teach us about what you're doing. So before we do that, I always like to do a little intro about the pre-Saybrook Lilith or the pre-Saybrook person. Uh-huh. What were you doing prior to Saybrook, and what kinds of experiences did you have that were very formative in your life?
So prior to Saybrook, I'm actually an alumni of Pacific Oaks College. I have my master's in human development, and it's grounded in early childhood education and social justice. So I've been a frontline activist since I was about 17. I've done a number of organizing. I was organizing for Standing Rock. I've been working with young children. That's like my big heart is young children. I really believe that we have to take care of them. We have to teach them. We have to guide them so that our future as a collective, as a community, as a society can be improved amidst stuff we're seeing even in today. And to undo the white supremacist rhetoric that we also see has been ramped up throughout the years is not anything new. It's just louder.
It's louder than what it was.
It's louder. And I believe, you know, social media plays a big role in that. You know, it's a different time. I mean, I'm a Gen Xer, so my life is, I was raised pretty feral. You know, it's like they had the TV came on at 10 o'clock. It's like, do you know where your children are? That was my generation, right?
And me now, too, yeah.
Right?
Latchkey kids, right? Yeah.
I know. We made it out alive, and therefore, here we are, you know, just trying to, like, make sure, like, our millennials and our Gen Zers, you know, kind of make it through this next impact that we have going on, which they are faced off with. Climate change, war, continuation of ethnic cleansing, genocide, even genocide that is continuing here in the United States, right? And things that we don't talk about, I talk about and I make people really uncomfortable. But if you're uncomfortable, you're growing. So that's the medicine, right? So that's kind of the work that I've been doing prior to now. And now as I'm more focused into just getting through my dissertation, I'm also observing life in Costa Rica, how capitalism, colonialism, globalism is affecting our southern relatives. That's been a really interesting road for me this last year. So I'm actually part of the Global Distinction Program through the TCS education. I actually did a webinar with them on a program foundation in Jaco, Costa Rica, called Pedavitas Fighting for Kids, that helps keep the kids out of drugs and prostitution because their home has been destabilized by the gentrification and colonization of Americans, Europeans, and Canadians in Costa Rica region. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing stuff, the stuff that I'm learning and observing, and stuff that I'm also pouring into things that will be coming out later I'm a contributing author to Asian and Loud. That's a book that's going to be coming out next year. And I just published my own book on my dad's immigration story, Brave Papers.
And we're going to get into that in just a little bit here. So I want to hear more about that because it's very timely, especially with a lot of the intersections happening today as well, right? With everything that's going on at the border.
It's all connected.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
It's all connected.
So you found your way to Saybrook University, and it probably wasn't too hard to find your way kind of from Pacific Oaks College, our sister college, but I'd like to learn more from you about how you found your way to the Transformative Social Change Program. What was it that stood out for you? What was kind of the big markers for you that made it seem a fit?
So it's actually really interesting. I didn't know Saybrook existed. It's not something that Pacific Oaks had even advertised. Otherwise, I would have done my PhD years ago after I finished my master's with Saybrook. So I had no idea, actually, Saybrook even existed. I was originally accepted to Capella's PhD program in human behavior. So that was actually the original road I was on. But because I was running into your stereotypical institutional racist crap, if you will, I had students coming at me for things that I was posting in my discussions to speak out, you know, in from the anti-racist lens. It's the typical, you know, white fragility of just like, you hurt my feelings because I have to look at my whiteness now, my privilege. And then I got into it with a couple professors on the same vein with my papers, because I will write from that perspective. That is my lens. And we have to work from that lens if we want liberation. So I will go hurt your feelings. I'm sorry, but you will grow and you will be okay. So I started at Capella and I left my 4.0 GPA because of this and said, unless you can do better as an institution, I'm out of here. And left. And when I left was during the time the spawn Atlanta was shot up, which hits very close to me because I can't change this. I can't change this. And the atrocities that were already happening with COVID, my life was being threatened. I couldn't go to the grocery store. I didn't leave my house for a year. My daughter was having horrible things said to her at school, because she was in high school at the time. So that was kind of the life I was in. And so I went and I searched PhD social justice, and Saybrook came up, but it came up as Transformative Social Change. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I did some more searching around it and found actually your podcast with Dr. Joel Fetterman.
Back in the early days. Yes.
Well, I looked at the chair and I was like, all right, who is this cat? Right. And so I looked him up. And this is what I found, was the two of you and him actually telling his story about, you know, what it meant to him to go out to Standing Rock. And so I said, okay, let's get this institution a try. And here I am 3 years later.
That's a great story and a great plug for the podcast. So thank you, Lilith. You didn't even think you'd be playing into that. That's really terrific. You know, for those who don't know, the Transformative Social Change Program that we have affectionately called TSC was founded back in 2015-16 and sort of grew out of a lot of different things happening. We had a human sciences program. We had a psychology with a specialization in transformative social change. And it became its own program. And I think it's grown in many beautiful ways. And we've attracted really powerful students like yourself who are coming in and wanting to do the work and the research and the scholarship, but also the action that is so needed. And that leads me to really my next question around that research and the work you're doing. So when you think about, let's start here first, kind of at the big picture, why is TSC as a program important to even have? And you may not think it is, so it's okay. Like, however you may have a different take on this, but I'm going to start there and then would like to get into your research. But kind of globally, what is the benefit of such a program at a university from your perspective?
Transformative social change is the groundwork where now our master's and PhD students can integrate knowledge, collectiveness, collective thought around anti-racist thinking, perspective, liberation movements. That now goes back out into the world, and we integrate that into everything that we touch, whether it's frontline activism, mutual aid, just being in a corporate office. Let's undo the colonization in corporate offices. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about DEI being 75% white male. That's kind of problematic. Why are things staying the same? People always ask that question. The opportunities within TSC is to unpack that. And in order to, as we unpack it, it's like kind of like a, people hear me talk about this quite a bit. I look at racism and I look at the isms that we have across the board as an infection. This is our opportunity to clean out that infection. That's almost in a way why we're seeing it kind of erupting at this point, is because the infection is boiling. And so that gives all of us the opportunity, especially if we are like-hearted, like-minded, and we are all working towards a common goal. How do we then spread ourselves out to all these different arenas to touch on these different places, to bring that healing, to bring that thought, that lens, to look at the world from an anti-racist, decolonial perspective? It's vital for everything that we do in this life. It is vital for the survival of the circle of crisis, right? The circle of crisis is BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, people of color, trans. That is the circle of our crisis. If we lift up from that center, everything else is lifted up. We are helping all of us from lifting up from that circle of crisis. So having a program like TSC offers us that opportunity to also not only think about this, not just from an academic perspective, but from a very humanistic perspective, and also make those networks. One of the things that I love most about this program is my collaboration and the friendships I've developed with other members of my program, because we're all working towards a common goal. And then we're cross-pollinating. Like, I have friends in the mind-body medicine. We're now cross-pollinating this like thinking. So now it's not just in a box. It is a flame.
Nicely put. Yeah.
And spreading in a beautiful way. We are warming ourselves and we are tending to that home fire. We are working to raise up that energy so that love will actually prevail, and that will be the model.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. I maybe take a moment. In the confines of the time we have together, we're not going to be able to unpack some of these important ideas. I really would love to, at another point in time with maybe you and some of your colleagues, to dig into anti-racism as well as decolonial praxis and pedagogy. Talk for a minute from your perspective. What exactly is anti-racism? And I know this sounds like, here I go again, having to explain like what should be a basic concept. But if you think about the current milieu of what we're living in, and you know this, right? Anti-racism is on the attack. It's too woke. It's too problematic. It silences people. We all should be able to have a lot of different discussions in the workplace and in the educational place. And here we are today. So what is anti-racism from your perspective? And then maybe we'll get into decolonial praxis in a moment if we have time. Go ahead.
So I'm going to start with a story. When I was a youth growing up, I grew up in a predominantly white community. My family was one of three Asian families. And I was pretty young. I think I was, when this was really intense for me, I was about probably 8 years old. And I was being horribly bullied by the popular kids. Remember the popular kids from Gen X? They all wanted to be part of the John Hughes movies.
Yeah.
So I'm being chased around. I'm being chased around the schoolyard, being called all these names, but the names I was being called was Chink, Oriental, and Slant Eye, amidst some of the names I was being called. And because of that, it internalized within myself of feeling like I'm just this ugly little Chinese girl. I don't belong here. My life is not worthy. Those were the internalized messages of these racist words that were being flung at me by other children. Hence why I work with children. Because if I'm on the schoolyard, I could say, hey, this behavior is not acceptable. Right? So we look at it from the racist perspective. And people, I think, confuse racism. Where now they're like, well, you're racist against white people. Racism is a systemic construct that was designed by our government, by our world government, to oppress other people. It's a system. Let's start there. When you're saying you're being racist, so the problem that we have in the United States is white supremacy. Why? Because the way our country was founded. Our country is founded on stolen land. It's founded on genocide. Genocide that is still being enacted today. And people don't want to face the fact that reservations are concentration camps. They don't want to face that. We had Japanese concentration camps. Forget this kind of history. But this history is imperative. We forget that as gentrification has moved through communities, oh, we don't want Black people in this part of the community, so we're going to move them over here. But then we're not going to provide city funding like we would do to our white neighborhoods. And then we could just look at them and say, oh, but they're just like dirty people. Like they're not worth anything. Racism treats us of color like we are not living, breathing human beings. It was really easy for that man to walk into a spa and murder women like me because we are not seen as human. And it goes all the way back down to immigration, right? We're like, oh, foreigners, oh, aliens. It separates us. It separates our humanness. It separates our culture. So when we talk about an anti-racist lens, it is the acceptance of each other and self. When we work from an anti-racist perspective, we are reaching across the table or next to us and holding the hand of the other person and saying, your culture is beautiful. You are beautiful and you are worthy. That is anti-racism.
That overview, I think, was particularly powerful to me because it really, and I think this is what's beautiful about Saybrook. It's both the individual and the experience of that and the application to systems, right? How are we really seeing this in the totality of its impact and how do we change that? And how do we change that for the better? And I think one of the, not that this is for our audience, I think not for you, Lilith, because you're on it and you got it. But I think when we talk about humanistic values, one of the things that we talk about so passionately is that humanistic values are really rooted in anti-racism, in pro-social, pro-human terms, that we value the life, dignity, and worth of all people. And if you do that, if you embrace that, then racism does not have a place in our hearts, in our society. That's a big leap for a lot of folks to make and to really do that internal deep assessment. We're going to have you back and we're going to talk more about decolonization because that's a big topic.
Yeah, it is.
And it's an important one for us to deconstruct at some point. I want to get into a little bit about your research. So spend just a minute or two talking about the work you're looking to accomplish with your transformative social change, and we'll close out with your book. So take it away.
Well, it's actually tied to my book. So my dissertation is focused in children's literature. And going back to the systems in play, right? Let's take, for example, publishing. Media is the most powerful moneymaker and the most powerful source of information we have globally. It's skewed. Right? We know that we're not getting accurate information unless we're digging in and looking for it. So just as an example, what was happening during World War II? They were distributing millions of leaflets of anti-Jewish rhetoric. They were promoting that they are human. There's a book called The Poison Mushroom. It's a children's book that was published by the Nazis. They used that of how to identify a Jew and that they were not human. Now, tie that back into the U.S. Our diversity books have been awarded, right? We take Arrow in the Sun. I don't know if you remember that one from when you were a child. That was awarded the Caldecott Medal in 1974. A white man wrote that. A white man illustrated that. He misrepresented the culture, which he was called out about. Nobody wanted to hear it. Again, system. It's also during a time when indigenous communities were not allowed to practice their ceremonies. They were stripped of their ceremonies until about 1978. And by then, we had the whole hippie movement going on that was appropriating indigenous culture, which is another form of erasure. And here we are. Now we have things like Burning Man, which again is perpetuating that, which is its own version of cultural genocide, right? So the work that I've been doing has been around this very basic thing, which we all love children's books. But if you even look at it today, there are more children's books about animals than there are about people of color. There's only about 10% of us who are published of our own stories. Like even my dad's story was published a couple of times, one of which by a white woman. And I'm like, sorry, sweetheart, but that's not your story to tell. That's not your story to tell. And that's been one of the big challenges. Now, let's take it a step further back into the system. Penguin Random House carries 80% of the stocks globally. A lot of money. Okay. They're the number one publisher in the United States for children's literature. They partnered with a company, I'm probably going to mangle the name because I don't know how to pronounce it properly in German, Bertelsmann. And that's one of the top 10 media companies in Germany. They own Penguin Random House 100%. They are now the parent company of Penguin Random House, along with like Warner Brothers and AT&T in this big, you know, massive corporation. The original owners, this media company, produced 12 million leaflets in participation of the genocide of the Jewish people. Their children were part of the Nazi youth movement. They own the largest publishing company in the United States for children's literature. That is horrifying. But people don't know this information.
And they serve as gatekeepers to, right? They serve as gatekeepers to a very critical group of people who desperately and definitely want access to this information, to new authors, to BIPOC authors. And what is happening today, I think, is the big, to your point, 10% are still only being discovered. When I published, yeah, and back in 2000, I was working with my dissertation advisor and my a friend of mine, Eric Jackson, who we interviewed here. He's an African-American historian. And we were writing a book. It was an edited volume of African-American peace leaders of the 20th century and really covering all the amazing things that they had done. And to your kind of tangential but connected to your point, to get access to those was a hot mess, from the rights to acquire them, even though they were not, they should have been widely accessible through the Library of Congress or different archives, could still not access them without paying way more. And they still had no reach until we finally did pay them and got these into this book. You know, they were lost to a lot of poor practices. And frankly, I think, you know, that was informed by a lot of racism that was impacting access and availability in those instances. So your work is very important and your points are important for us to consider longer term. Before we close out, I'd like to hear more from you just briefly about your book. First of all, what is it? briefly, what's it about and where can we find it?
So it's self-published because I'm not going to battle the publishing companies. It can be found on Amazon. The title is Brave Paper Son, and it's my father's immigration story. He came here in 1938, which was during the time of the Chinese Exclusion Act. So that is his story as a six-year-old coming to this country, what he experienced. And then at the end of the book, if you get a chance to read it, I think you'll enjoy this piece. I do include a timeline of the actual history and inviting parents and caregivers to do that deeper work so that they can unpack it with their children as their children grow.
That is so awesome. And for the record, it is super easy to get, to buy. If you're on Kindle Unlimited, you can get it that way too. We'll put the link in the show notes and make sure that everyone has access. By the way, I posted it just last week and we had a number of people like already going there. So hopefully you'll get some traction.
Thank you.
On this very important work. Absolutely. Absolutely. So we close out our interviews with two questions for each guest. These are short, quick takes. So you know, the first thing that comes to mind. So the first question is, what does the term humanistic mean to you?
Humanistic to me is pretty much exactly what you and I are doing right here. Two humans coming together, sharing time. If we were in the same room together, maybe we'd be sharing food, water, libations, whatever that looks like, and being in community together and looking after each other and just being good people to each other.
Beautifully stated. And lastly, what are three things someone can do right now? What are three actions they can take to help improve or make the world better?
Know who your neighbors are. See if they need assistance. See if they need support. Build trust, grounded in integrity with other people. If you feel like you have work to do, instead of being toxic and projecting that, do the work within and get the help. But reach across to other people. Mutual aid is going to be the number one thing that we need to improve our society. We can't look to the system to be fixed at this point. All we can do is look to each other and take care of each other.
That's great. Anything else you want to add to that? I think that was beautiful in its own right.
No, that's pretty much a nutshell of the world of Lilith.
All right. That sounds good. The world of Lilith is a cool world, by the way. So with that, where can people find you on the web?
Well, you can find me through my business page, TripleWaterways_LLC on Instagram or TripleWaterways on TikTok. My website is triplewaterways.com. TripleWaterways, because I'm a Scorpio and a Pisces rising, Pisces moons, I feel literally everything in the world. Those are the best ways to find me if anybody wants to reach out and open some doors to connection and conversation.
Lilith Chung, it has been a pleasure, albeit far too short of time together, but we're going to find more time in seat and in conversation and humanistic dialogue. You're a wonderful addition to our human family, and so glad to know you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Long. I really appreciate you, and it's really good to see you again.
Likewise. Terrific job, Lilith. We really, really appreciate you being on today. I hope you all enjoyed Lilith as much as I did. It was truly informative. Remember her major takeaway, and I love this. And we could have had three, but I think this one just nailed it down so well. Know your neighbors, build trust grounded in integrity with other people, because that mutual aid is the number one thing we need going forward. Really well said. If you want to see the YouTube version, please visit our Saybrook YouTube page. If you'd like to support the podcast, go to Apple iTunes and leave that 5-star rating and review and subscribe so you can get episodes as they come out. If you're on Spotify, leave a 5-star rating and make sure to follow us. You can, of course, subscribe to us on most major podcast platforms, including Google Podcasts, soon to be YouTube Music, Stitcher, Pandora, and others. Remember to check our show notes for information on Lilith, including links to her book and the like. And for more about our university, go to www.saybrook.edu. Click on Areas of Study at the top of the page. Locate the program of your choice to learn more. In this case, it's Transformative Social Change. Or simply Google Saybrook University. That's it for today, folks. Thank you so much. Take care of each other. Please, please, please take care of each other and be well.